up a little bit of ground. Because when I first got here, I was really struggling to get through half of the questions, but we would kind of keep marching through the material, and that's good, and that's not so good sometimes. But today, I thought, because the events are very similar that we're going to talk about, I don't want to gloss over them too much, but we're going to try to cover a little bit more than we normally do by way of text. But it's two interchanges through Paul's course here as he gives testimony, we might say, or giving his rebuff or his account of his actions, his defense, we might say, of the things which he's being accused of. And we're going to cover a decent amount of text this morning. So I have 5. I have 5 slides full of text. We're going to read from 24:1, beginning of 24, to the 12th verse of 25. I would love to have volunteers to read these slides if anyone feels so compelled. So if you could raise your hand and volunteer. If not, I'll read them all, and that's fine too. But I like to hear from other people as well. Anybody want to take off with 24:1 through 10? Zip, go ahead, Richard. Thank you.
And after 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders and spokesmen, one Tertullus, and laid before the governors their case against Paul. And when he had been summoned, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, "Since though we enjoy much peace, and since your foresight, most excellent Felix, reforms are being made for this nation, in every way and everywhere we accept this with all gratitude. But to detain you no further, I beg you in your kindness to hear us briefly, for we have found this man a plague, one who stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world and is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. He even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. By examining him yourself, you will be able to find out from him about everything of which we accuse him. The Jews also joined in him. The Jews also joined in the charge, affirming that all these things were so. And when the governor had nodded to him to speak, Paul replied."
Okay. Anybody want to take up 11?
Through what?
11 through 21.
Okay. "You can easily verify that no more than 12 days ago, I went up to Jerusalem to worship. My accusers did not find me arguing with anyone at the temple or stirring up a crowd in the synagogues or anywhere else in the city. And they cannot prove to you the charges they are now making against me. However, I admit that I worship the God of our ancestors as a follower of the way, which they call a sect. I believe everything that is in accordance with the law and that it is, that is written in the prophets. And I have the same hope in God as these men themselves have, that there will be a resurrection of both the righteous and the wicked. So I strive always to keep my conscience clear before God and man. After an absence of several years, I came to Jerusalem to bring my people gifts for the poor and to present offerings. I was ceremonially clean when they found me in the temple courts doing this. There was no crowd with me, nor was I involved in any disturbance. But there are some Jews from the province of Asia who ought to be here before you and bring charges if they have anything against me. For those who are here should state what crime they found in me when I stood before the Sanhedrin. Unless it was this one thing I shouted as I stood in their presence, it is concerning the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial before you today."
Good. 22 through 27.
"But Felix, having a rather accurate knowledge of the way, put them off, saying, 'When Lysias the tribune comes down, I will decide your case.' Then he gave orders to the centurion that he should be kept in custody, but have some liberty, and that none of his friends should be prevented from attending to his needs. After some days, Felix came with his wife Priscilla, who was a Jewish, And he sent for Paul and heard him speak about the faith in Christ Jesus. And as he reasoned about the righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment, Felix was alarmed and said, "Go wait for the present. When I get an opportunity, I will summon you." At the same time, he hoped that money would be given to him by Paul. So he sent for him often and conversed with him. When two years had elapsed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and desiring to do the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul in prison.
Good. Starting in 25, 1 through 6.
Now when Festus had come to the province after 3 days, he went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief men of the Jews informed him against Paul, and they petitioned him, asking a favor against him that he would summon him to Jerusalem, while they lay in ambush along the road to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself was going there shortly. Therefore he said, "Let those who have authority among you go down with me and accuse this man, to see if there is any fault in him." And when he remained among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea. And the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, he commanded Paul to be brought. When he had come, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood about and laid many serious complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, "Neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I offended in anything at all." But Festus, wanting to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul and said, "Are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and be judged before me concerning these things?" So Paul said, "I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you very well know. For if I am an offender or have committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to dying. But if there is nothing in these things which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar." And Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, "You have appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you shall go."
So quite the political exercise here, is it not? I mean, we have, you know, someone who at any moment, you know, some of these judges, some of these, you know, kings that we're going to talk about, they have the power to decide right then how much longer you'll live on this earth, you know, to a large degree. And as we read through his accounts and his answers, you can't help but notice the boldness that Paul has in all this. But I can't help to go back and hearken to that idea that the Lord told Paul, you know, "Don't worry, you just speak, and the words will be given," right? And you can see this. I mean, he doesn't even know half the charges brought against him, you know. And then he's kind of given an opportunity to answer without any preparation, without any deposition, without any period of discovery. For those of you that are, you know, in law and understand how that process goes, he's just answering off the cuff, standing in front of a crowd, with the weight of the determination of his life or his death on the line. And yet we see him answer consistently, confidently, boldly about the things which he is sure that he believes and shares with this group. So just an amazing story here as all this unfolds. But again, since these two, you know, scenarios kind of fit in the same or similar category, I wanted to kind of cover these together. Now, I don't normally do this, but since we are covering a decent amount this morning, there's just kind of like a bulleted highlight of the activities we're looking over today, and we're just going to kind of bracket those as we go down, but it doesn't affect the questions at all. So this first question here, after Paul is safely delivered to Caesarea and kept in Herod's judgment hall, who is introduced at the beginning of this chapter in 24, and what accusations are railed against this guy? So who do we read about here in the beginning of 24? Right? Okay, so we got Ananias the high priest, okay, showing up here. And who is this Tertullus fellow? Okay, so he's a lawyer. Do we know much about this guy? I mean, he certainly, you know, seems to be the spokesperson, right, of the group. So I kind of read this as a hired hand, right? They went out and they tried to find someone that they thought, you know, was going to present the case present the case in their favor as best he could. We want to be careful here, because what's really interesting is how Tertullus goes about telling his story. You know, it's interesting when we see people recount the story of events that have happened prior, they're not always very accurate, are they? And I mean, you know, the Roman soldiers go in and rescue Paul from being pulled in half, a riot that would have almost, you know, surely brought about his death, like a lynching, we might think. And then Tertullus unwinds this thing like they were examining him. They were questioning him. They wanted to find out more about him. And it's interesting here, the way that we see Tertullus approach this. So what accusations? You know, what is he really pinpointing the accusations against Paul? They're really four. And as we read through those, we can see those there in the beginning of the chapter. What are they? Did anybody have those down?
Verse 5 said he calls dissension.
Okay.
Verse 6 said he profaned the temple.
Right. That's an old charge coming back, right?
Yeah.
They were really worried about. Found him to be what kind of fellow, depending on your translation? A pest or a pestilent fellow, right? Pest doesn't seem to carry as much weight as this idea of a pestilent fellow. You know, if somebody's a pest, you might just call your younger brother or sister a pest sometime. But a pestilent fellow, I think of pestilence, right? I think of this thing that's always eating and, you know, kind of bothering and bugging me on many levels. So a pestilent fellow. And then, so he's also, there's one word used actually here, and it's the only place in the whole Bible it's used. And it's actually meant to be like the absolute captain, the forefront, the spokesperson, the person in charge of it all. Ringleader. And so isn't it interesting when you think about in the original text, they're using a word that describes Paul as the grand poobah, right? The very pinnacle of the triangle, you know, of all of this heresy or this sect, right? Which Paul calls what? It's not the first time we've heard this illustration.
The
way, right? Very good, very good. Okay, so yeah, so those are really the accusations that are leveled against him. Number two, how did Paul defend himself against these accusations? And I'll just kind of plant the little seed. Does he begin his address in the same way that Tertullus begins his address? So think about that. But how did Paul defend himself against these accusations? What did he say? How did he answer? What is it?
I can't prove it.
Well, certainly they can't prove it. Now, when you think about how Tertullus starts his defense, okay, is there any physical reaction you have to how he starts his pleading at the court? Rich?
In the court of public opinion. I mean, even with the use of ringleader. Ringleader never has a positive connotation to it anyhow. You know, and he draws up, he starts to stir up the Jews because he starts digging from the past to start with. And anything he can possibly do to make Paul look bad in their eyes. I mean, forget, never let a bad situation go to waste. And he digs it up and tries to throw it back up on there and heat it up.
Well, that's certainly a tactic, right? He's definitely working that angle. How about just a little before that? How does he make the address to Felix? How does he address the governor initially, Kevin?
He kind of says, you've been doing such a good job. We're enjoying a lot of peace here. And it would almost be perfect. This one guy, Paul, he's ruining, he's a fly in the ointment of your work.
Right? Dave, is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, he's... You know, Tertullus uses flattery and...
That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, Paul's like honest and brief. Even though he's not going to like what he hears, he's like, I'm going to put it out there.
So that's exactly the connection I was going to say. I kind of get uneasy when I start reading Tertullus because it's all this schmoozy, you know, kind of flattery. It's icky, man. I mean, flattery, you know, there's some verses in the Scripture, Old Testament, talk about that can be sinful. You know, because that's not honest. You know, you're just doing that for manipulative purposes. And, you know, Paul just curt, straightforward. Now, it's not like he steamrolls him. You know, he just says, hey, look, I know you've been doing this for a long time. And I know you have a really good knowledge of the way of the Jews. So I all the more cheerfully answer for myself. Right, let's get this thing moving. And, you know, you can't argue with fact. Right? You know, the last class we had together, why didn't the Jews just disprove Paul's position from the text, from their authority? Because they couldn't. Because he had the truth, right? He was fulfilling those things that the prophets had spoken about. Very good. We can't answer the same thing. So number three here. Paul's defense, kind of how he addresses this, speaks of both kind of civil and spiritual responsibilities. When he lays out his defense to Felix, Why doesn't he just clearly just start preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ here? Why does he not just kind of teach the governor here the same thing that he's been accused of teaching everywhere else, just so he could show by comparison the difference? Any idea?
Understood.
Right?
And didn't really care because he wanted money.
So
he had a different, whole different agenda. Paul knew it.
Well, okay, so Paul understood his audience. Paul understood his audience so many times, didn't he?
Because remember when he said, "I've become all things to all men that I might by those means save some, except those without law, you know, to God." So this idea that if he just sits and starts to preach the gospel, starts to give this defense in those same ways, does Felix want to hear this? Now, he just wants to understand what he has to do to settle the matter to kind of move it along, right? Now granted, even though he has some knowledge of the Jews and whatnot, that's not his ultimate goal. Now it is interesting how this all develops, right? And we give Paul that credit. But you know, Paul also understood that he wanted to make sure that when he gave his defense, he said, you know, "I'm worshiping the God of our fathers." Right? That's something that appealed heavily to the Roman culture, right? Is this ancestral type worship. So he's drawing them on, him on, at least directly, Paul, by tapping into those things that even the Romans valued. Right? So he really sets this up so that he can put forth his case for them to understand how genuinely sincere Paul is in what he's doing. He's not a ringleader. He's not a pestilent fellow. He's trying to do something incredibly noble and incredibly honorable. And he needed to establish some common ground with the Romans so that they would genuinely hear. Remember how many times we talked about building rapport with people before you try to teach them anything or have conversations? You know, we say that is so valuable because we want that common ground to open our hearts and to open our ears to what's being said. Very good. Number four, what is said of Felix's understanding that lays strongly in Paul's favor? What is it said of Felix about the subject matter that Paul was talking about?
He said he had a more accurate understanding of the way than his predecessors that had heard his. So he knew a little bit about what Paul was going to be talking about.
Exactly. Verse 22, right?
Yeah, verse 22.
And it talks about,
you know, this idea that he's been in office for a while, so he's had some experience, whether he's wanted it or not. But yeah, so in the King James, it talks about having a more perfect knowledge of that way. You know, it is nice to talk with somebody, especially if you're in trouble or if you're having trouble with something, talking to someone who understands where you're coming from, or at least has some idea. Because how many times have you wanted to talk to somebody and in your heart you're like, he just wouldn't understand? You know, that's difficult. When you have someone that might be able to empathize, it might be able to emotionally relate to your struggle, but can't genuinely sympathize. They've not been there. They don't know what that experience is like. You know, so it's certainly helpful to talk, but it's so much more helpful to be able to connect with people that have a better understanding. Very good. Why does Felix defer the case? You know, he could have put judgment down here once he heard, you know, Tertullus's, you know, defense, or I guess, what is that called? Prosecution? And then Paul's defense of the accusations. Why did he defer it?
He wanted to do him a favor, to do the Jews a favor, but, you know, in a situation like this where you're going to give, you know, his judgment was going to be, you didn't do anything wrong. You know, kind of, he's almost in the same position Pilate was in. Mm-hmm. When you're going to give bad news to a big group of people that aren't happy, better off just to kind of go and then just, well, you know, I'm going to defer.
I didn't think about that.
I'll kick this one down to the next guy, which is what he does. But, you know, because it says, you know, he's wanting to do, wants to do a favor with them. And
well, that's an excellent point. I didn't think about that, but I was thinking just a touch before that when he talked about waiting on somebody.
He said, you know, we're going to defer this until somebody else comes. Anybody remember who that was?
Well, so I'm looking in 22, right after the comment that Ed made, and he says, and when Felix had heard of these things, having more perfect knowledge of that way, he deferred them and said, when Lysias, the chief captain, shall come down, I will know the uttermost of your matter. Who is this Lysias guy again?
He's the guy that broke up the fight.
Right, he's the guy that wrote the letter, right? He's the one that went down in and kind of saved Paul and pulled him out. He's also the one that bound him and almost
scourged him, which we leave those pieces out. But so Felix is wanting to hear from this Lysias fellow. And again, you know, when you look at everything and you kind of know the whole story, you know, this is only going to work in Paul's favor once he hears Lysias, you know. But again, this is the deferent here. But then, of course, you know, you see this developing with the Jews here, because it's interesting how this plays out with this relationship and the almost deja vu, right, that Paul's got to be feeling as some of this happens to unfold. Number five, did Felix have any other means to know or understand of the Jewish law? And what was his wife's name? Anybody remember?
Drusilla.
Now, I'm not real good with the, you know, kind of the connections of everything, but she's connected back into King Agrippa, right? So I believe a daughter. So, and it's interesting, you know, that, you know, Felix has these connections. He's been in, you know, rule for a long time. He's got the ability to know and to see and experience a lot of the Jewish culture and the Jewish social and civic customs, and he's been the ruler there. But he also has a wife who's a Jewess. So he certainly, probably out of all the people that Paul could have come up to at this point, probably the most favorable. And I'm sure that wasn't an accident. And when I say favorable, I don't mean the most kind. I mean the most favorable from a circumstantial standpoint. You know, Felix would have had a dramatic amount of knowledge that a lot of the other Roman rulers wouldn't have wanted or bothered with at all. Very good. Number six, how did Felix respond to Paul's reasoning? Right, because it says, and we have to assume that Felix and Drusilla were away for a while, because it says, you know, they come back, and Drusilla desired to hear Paul, and so they sent for him, and Paul comes, and Paul talks with them. How did Felix respond to the conversation? Translations record this a little differently, but
he was afraid.
Right?
He was afraid and wanted to, you know, think about it and listen to him some other time.
You know, it's interesting. Felix doesn't strike me as a man of action. Right? He's the guy that kicks the ball down the road, like you said, Matthew. I like that illustration. Because there are a couple different opportunities just in this limited text that we see that he could have made a decisive, you know, kind of play, and he does not. So the King James says what? He starts with a T. Trembled, right? We're going to talk about that for the sermon this morning. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways we could look at this, but there was a very physical reaction, was there not? And I don't know if it's physical, but there was an absolute reaction to what Paul was teaching. Now, whether it's physically trembling, I'm not trying to emphasize that. I'm trying to emphasize that this was not something that could be mistaken. Felix had a response to what Paul said. What did Paul say? What does the text tell us that Paul spoke about?
Said reasoning about righteousness, self-control, and judgment.
Righteousness, self-control, and judgment. Now, we're going to break this down in our lesson today, so we're not going to talk a lot about this right now. But when you think about righteousness, temperance, or self-control, and judgment. Now, granted, King James English is what it is, 1611 English. Temperance in 1611 meant a lot more than just kind of like abstinence from alcohol and things like that. Temperance meant self-control, and that's why you'll see that in the King James. So why do you think, if Paul is kind of expanding or expounding, we might say, if we're talking about these topics, that Felix would have this kind of response?
Conviction of sin.
Conviction of sin. Wow. That just wraps up about 5 minutes of conversation in three words. Conviction of sin. Felix likely carrying any sin with him. You know, what do we say about absolute power? Corrupts absolutely. And although Felix by no means had absolute power, in his sphere, he did. So up until the level of power that he had, sometimes we don't make decisions based on what is true and just and right, make decisions on how we feel or what we want or what we don't like. And so positions of authority bring great responsibility. And to know and to learn of secular history with Roman leaders and proconsuls and whatnot, you know they were prone to very unscrupulous acts often. Ed?
This guy was a corrupt guy. You know, we look when we see what happens, he wants to keep Paul in prison, hoping that he's going to give him money.
because that was a practice back then. Sometimes folks would pay their way out. And it says over there in verse 26, I believe, that he says, meanwhile, he hoped that the money would be given by Paul that he might release him. So Paul had an opportunity to buy his way out of this. And this guy, that's what he wanted to happen. That's why he kept him in jail for 2 years. We never, when we read the account, unless I missed it, we never see the captain that he's talking about, that Lystra's coming. He doesn't come. We don't see the accusers come. So everybody that they're waiting on to hold his trial, they don't show up. So his only thing is, I'm going to keep Paul in jail. This pleases the Jews, but he might pay me off, and then I'll go that direction.
Because what does it say that he did with Paul because of the money?
He sent for him.
Oh yeah, he asked him to come back and talk to him more times.
Yeah, he sent for him all more often. You know, like, hey, maybe this time. You know, hey, he just had some visitors come. Hey, we'll ask him to come back. Maybe his visitors gave him some money so that he might be paid off. Yes, ma'am.
He was bribing him.
Well, that's exactly what this is, right?
And so I've got a friend who was born and raised for up to 42 years of his life in Kashmir, India. And, you know, from India and in the Indian culture, now he is a believer in Jesus Christ, a great man. But yet it's interesting when he talks about his culture, because he talks about bribing as a way of life. It's just the way things get done. And he, from a youth, has always refused to do that. And the amount of time it takes to get anything done without bribing and patting palms is just amazing. But yes, so he certainly was not quite the most noble man, and was certainly working against, you know, those things that would be lawful by waiting for these bribes. How long did this continue? Did it bring about any specific results? We're running out of time here pretty quick.
2 years.
Right, for about the space of 2 years.
And we don't really learn much about, right, Felix? It's just, when I have a what time? A more convenient time. And what a great lesson, right, for us to teach anybody we come in contact with about the danger of delay. As 25 opens, an old threat to Paul's safety reemerges. Anybody remember what that was? I'll kind of help you through these because we're running out of time. In verse 7 there it says, and when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about. Oh wait, no, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong spot here. Is that 9? Okay, so I do have the wrong set of scripture there in the rest.
Jerusalem, so when he's on the road, they could kill him.
There you go. That's what I was going to go for, because I couldn't have the right scripture verse. They wanted him to go back up, right?
So they could assassinate him again. And this ambush is old news, right? Well, not old news, but an old tactic. And I just wonder, you know, we don't really know, but you wonder if it's from those same folks. You know, they're getting hungry now. But think about this. Remember when we said time heals all wounds? It's been a minute, hasn't it? I'd say they're still a little sore over all this, for sure. In verse 9, or question 9 here, Pew now gathers around Paul making accusations here. Okay, so now that we've transitioned from Felix to Festus, we have the Jews, right? They are present. They are making these accusations. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, and it just says that they made the accusations, but it says they couldn't prove them, right? So they're out there, they're trying to make these things stick, and they just flat out can't, because Paul said even to Felix, right? You know, you've been able to witness my behavior. You've been able to see the things I've been doing. And that's why the scriptures tell us to live above reproach, right? So those are very important behaviors to have. The claims were not substantiated. What is said of Festus and his relationship with the Jews? We're referring back to that part where even Festus talked about wanting to to please the Jews. Even asking, hey, do you want to go up to Jerusalem to hear me in these matters? Paul could see through this, guys. Paul knew, okay, if this is the last thing we get to talk about here. We see that he was given liberty. We see that he was a prisoner. We see that he made really good use of his prison time, because even later in Acts we learn that he's writing epistles, right, that we still read from today. But when you think about, okay, when you think about what Paul knew that he was telling the truth. Paul knew the Jews wanted to kill him. Paul knew through the Spirit that he would give testimony in Rome. I appeal unto Caesar. He knew. He knew if he went back to Jerusalem, he knew if he tried to play around with any of that stuff. You got to take a look outside real quick and see all this snow. Can you see it? Those snowflakes are the size of quarters out there. At least they were. Sorry, we digress. It's beautiful. But yet he knew, right, that any dealings with the Jews, he might as well hand his life over. But he appeals unto Caesar. And then, of course, what was Festus' comment? For some reason, this is one that really sticks with me.
Thou hast appealed unto Caesar. Caesar.
And man, you know, we get to read of some amazing things we almost miss. Little comments like, and those of Caesar's household salute you. We're not there yet. We're not there yet. But can you not appreciate the power of the gospel when it's spoken in the confident voice of a man like Paul? And that's our desire, right? Let us find the confidence to speak these things boldly like Paul did, because we don't know where we'll be. We learn through the adventures of Paul that you can preach the gospel to anyone. Thank you guys so much for your time and your attention this morning and helping me try to get through both of these lessons in one session.